Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, August 6, 2021. Section A. There are no open beds at MMH. There are 240 patients in MMH, with 20 of those on hold in the ER. By Caitlin Randall. Officials reported Thursday that there are no beds available at Midland Memorial Hospital, leaving patients waiting in the emergency department as staff scramble to make room or transfer patients to other hospitals. The current hospital census is 240 patients, with 20 of those patients on hold in the emergency department until beds become available, according to Chief Medical Officer Dr. Larry Wilson. He said one patient has been in the emergency room waiting for a bed for almost 2 days. The emergency department is significantly overwhelmed and experiencing delays treating new patients because of the lack of beds. Of the 227 patients who came to MMH's emergency room yesterday, 39 were left without being treated because of the wait time. We are stretched to maximum capacity well beyond what we normally consider to be safe, Kip Bredema said during a press conference on Thursday. He added that he believes patient care is already being sacrificed because of the staffing shortage at MMH. Transfers to other hospitals are nearly impossible because every hospital in the state is experiencing a severe staffing shortage and limited bed capacity. At the height of the last COVID-19 surge, MMH staff were caring for 116 coronavirus patients, twice as many as the 57 patients officials reported Thursday. The difference between this wave and the previous wave, Bredema said, is that there are no longer 400 FEMA nurses coming to assist the hospital. It needs to be understood that we are in a crisis, he said. We are suffering from the inability to gain staff. Bredema said there are 57 contract nurses working in MMH currently, with 50 positions posted just to staff the open areas of the hospital. He said hospitals throughout the state and nation are trying to hire more workers, and there are 40,000 open positions nationwide. The problem has become so immediate that MMH has expanded their criteria to include unlicensed personnel who operate in a nurse's aide or patient care assistant role. Officials said that they've requested assistance from the state and FEMA, but have been told there is no help coming. Whereas the state had previously recruited and hired traveling nurses, hospitals are now responsible for managing recruitment alone. The rapid increase from single-digit COVID-19 patients a month ago to 57 on Thursday is because of the highly contagious Delta variant. Besides being more contagious than other strains of the coronavirus, Wilson said they are seeing younger patients requiring hospitalization and getting sicker quicker. Of the COVID-19 patients at MMH, 8 are in their 20s, 6 in their 30s, 10 in their 40s, 9 in their 50s, 2 or 11 are in their 60s, and 7 are in their 70s, and 1 is in their 80s. This skew to younger patients is consistent with what we're seeing with the number of people that are vaccinated in our county. Younger people tended not to get vaccinated. Wilson expressed frustration that fear of vaccine side effects is continuing to prevent people from getting vaccinated. He said no one in Midland County has died from COVID-19 after getting fully vaccinated, and only one vaccinated person, a 95-year-old patient, has needed to be put on a ventilator. By contrast, 276 unvaccinated residents have died of the COVID-19 in Midland County. Because of the recent coronavirus surge, Midland Health will resume administering vaccines. Wilson said walk-ins can receive a vaccine at the West Campus on Fridays from 1 to 4 p.m. New Park Parties program announced. For info, stop by Fasken Park from 8 a.m. to noon on Saturday. By Jack Ladd and Lori Blong. When the Quality of Place Committee first formed, our number one objective was to make Midland a better place to live. We believe that recent actions taken by residents and leaders in Midland have put us on the right track to achieve that goal. The Midland City Council has demonstrated its willingness to participate in this process by fully funding improvements to Hogan, Beale, Butler, Windlands, and Race Mashburn Elms parks. The idea in improving our premier parks was the hope that others would be inspired and request improvements to their smaller neighborhood parks, a trickle-down approach, if you will. We are happy to announce that starting Saturday, that hope has become reality. The city is pleased to announce the start of a new pilot program to improve neighborhood parks called Park Parties. This program will be a partnership between regular citizen volunteers and city staff. To paraphrase the 35th president, ask not what your city can do for you, but what you can do for your city. This new pilot program will allow residents to organize volunteers to clean up their local neighborhood parks. Tired of weeds, goat heads, stickers, and burrs? Call the city's Parks Department and request to join the Park Parties project. Participants in this project can pick a day for volunteers to come and weed, sow, and clean up their park, and the city will send park staff to assist and, upon completion, spray the park to make sure all that hard work doesn't go to waste. A special thanks to Diane Anderson and Andrew Latham for organizing our very first park party. If you are interested in helping out or just seeing what the program is all about, feel free to stop by Fascom Park from 8 a.m. to noon Saturday. Bring your gloves and gardening equipment and a can-do spirit. Should you wish to throw your own parks party, please call the Parks Department at 685-7356. Christian Dance Art Studio, now enrolling students. The River Fine Arts is a unique ministry dance and art studio by J.C. Lewis. A new Christian dance and art studio is now enrolling students. The River Fine Arts owner, Lauren Knowles, wanted to create a unique ministry dance and art studio in town. People can stop by 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday for an open house. The studio also will have a dedication and grand opening ceremony from 4:30 to 7:30 on Monday. Children can try on dance shoes and eat cookies during Monday's event. Knowles moved to Midland in 2009 to teach dance after graduating from college with a dance education degree. She and her husband Nathan moved to Ohio for a time, but moved back to Midland after he took a job at Christmas in Action as the director of operations. The studio she had been working at in Midland had closed, and she took some time off to start her family. "Dance ministry has been a missing part of my life," she said. "I danced for so many years and loved running the fine art studio. I have been looking for a while for a way to make it happen. I wanted to get back to the arts and ministry intersecting." The space used to be a ballroom dance studio at 4400 North Big Spring. The studio will offer classes for infants with their parents up to 18 years old. Dance classes include ballet, tap, jazz, and hip-hop. Knowles will offer a mom and me dance class, a bear cubs class where boys can come to get their energy out, and a sibling class where 3 to 7-year-old siblings can dance together. Art and theater classes will also be offered at the studio. "We are starting with a mommy and me baby class, and my little boy will help me teach the class," she said. "We have regular ballet and tap dance classes where they come in to learn the basics and do the performance recital in the spring. Then we have dance ministry classes starting at age 6 that are tuition free. We have theater classes which will cover acting, costuming, sets, and props where they can build a show and perform each year. Currently, the studio has an art class on Fridays called Make a Mess, where preschoolers can come in and do super fun, ridiculously messy projects that parents don't want in their own house. It focuses on sensory and hands-on projects. The other art classes are a mixed media approach as well, set for students at different levels and experiences. The Bear Cubs dance class will be for little boys who want to put on tap shoes and dance but might not want to stand still or make the perfect feet positions. The class will have themes like dinosaurs and outer space. The sibling class is a great opportunity for older siblings to mentor and lead their younger siblings, while the younger ones get excited about doing the same thing as their older ones. There will be a class where students can participate in Bible study and dance at an entry level. The River Fine Arts is named after Ezekiel 47:9 Bible verse, which states, "Every living thing that gathers where the river goes will live." The idea is that the river mentioned in this verse comes out from the throne of God, and everything that is growing next to the river is abundant and life-giving. The idea is that we plant the program, but not just the program, but the kids, families, and teachers next to the river of God to draw inspiration and strength from Him. She said the River Fine Arts will focus on the whole student and not simply dance competitions. We have a wonderful dance studio for a large variety of dancers in Midland, but no studio is approaching it from a ministry perspective. We will be very focused on the whole student with their dance or art technique alongside how to grow each student for what their purpose is and support them in their purpose later on in life. However, the studio isn't focusing on only a traditional type of dance ministry. When people hear a dance ministry, they think of waving flags, scarves, and banners. That's not the whole picture. Of course, while in the studio, people will hear Christian music, but we aren't strictly Christian music. We focus on good music. We are art that serves a purpose. She added that some classes might be playing Hillsong United music, while others will be dancing to top tunes from the 50s while learning their tap routines. She said she wants to focus on teaching students how to be conscious consumers of the culture around them. The River Fine Arts has 2 dance studios and 1 art room. Parents can watch their children in the lobby, where a live stream of each classroom will be projected on the lobby TV. Students will have a traditional recital in the spring, but she is also working on having a Christmas performance each year. Classes start on August 16th. The Midland Meat Company will build a new facility behind the current building. Owner John Scarber said current plans have them completing the building before Christmas. He said that he also has plans for North Midland around the half acre.
Midland Memorial Hospital reports number of COVID-19 patients top 50 by Stuart Doreen. The number of COVID patients in Midland Memorial Hospital on Thursday has topped 50. According to Midland Health, there were 51 active patients and 5 convalescing, for a total of 56, according to the morning report on Midland Health's website. That included 11 on ventilators. 1 month ago, there were 4. The increase in numbers has pushed the hospital's 7-day COVID occupancy percentage, total COVID inpatients, total hospital inpatients, to over 20% for the first time during this COVID spike. Midland Health also reported that of the 404 people tested at Midland Health testing centers, 1/4 of them have tested positive for COVID-19. The current COVID census, according to the hospital, includes 10 patients that are between 60 and 69 years of age, another 10 between 70 and 79, 9 between 40 and 49, and 7 between 20 and 29. Local roundup. DPS says Stanton man dies after fire truck fatality. A Stanton man died Wednesday morning after a crash involving a fire truck in Martin County, 5 miles north of Stanton. The Department of Public Safety reported that a Midland man was traveling west on Farm to Market Road 3113 around 9:50 a.m. following the 2011 International Truck Tractor towing a semi-trailer was a Ford F-350 fire truck. A DPS preliminary investigation showed the fire truck was responding to a crash with emergency lights activated. The fire truck began to pass the truck tractor as the truck tractor began to turn. The fire truck attempted to take evasive action, according to DPS, but collided with the truck tractor. The driver of the fire truck, Danny K. Ayrton of Stanton, 61, died at the scene. Another Stanton man was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital with incapacitating injuries. The driver of the truck tractor was transported to Martin County Hospital, also with incapacitating injuries. The crash is still under investigation. Woman arrested for harassment. Georgie Marie Lara, 21, was arrested Tuesday after she allegedly spit on a Midland police officer's face and said she had COVID-19. According to Lara's arrest affidavit, officers responded to Renew North Park Apartments on Tuesday night to execute a search warrant. Lara allegedly spit on an officer and said she had been diagnosed with the coronavirus when he attempted to search her apartment. She also allegedly yelled at and pushed officers at the scene, the affidavit states. Lara has been charged with harassment of a public servant and resisting arrest, as well as possession charges. She is currently being held at the Midland County Jail on a total $13,000 bond. Midlander receives 30 years. A 46-year-old Midland man received a sentence of 30 years in prison Thursday after pleading guilty to first-degree continuous sexual abuse of a child, according to Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodolf. Ismael Romero will not be eligible for parole or early release from the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, according to a press release. As part of the plea bargain in the case, the state agreed to dismiss three lesser-included charges of indecency with a child. The abuse in this case took place over a period from 2018 to 2020 and involved multiple allegations of sexual contact with a child under 14 years of age, according to the DA's office. MCT to start class registration. Registration begins Monday for Midland Community Theater's live and in-person theater school classes. This year, the theater will also be offering one-week programs for each of the Midland ISD intersessions. The fall intersessional will be Color Me Creative. Winter intersessional will be Royal Days and Polka Dot Nights. And Spring Break Fine Arts Camp will be Spring's the Thing. Visit bit.ly/3fardsx for more information about classes and registration. Food pantry opens facility. West Texas Food Bank, WTFB, partner agency, the Martin County Food Pantry, will be opening a new facility in Stanton. The new facility is an upgrade from the existing building, which was located in a one-bedroom efficiency at an existing housing development, according to a press release. The new facility features a walk-in cooler and freezer, which expand the food bank's capacity to distribute fresh produce and frozen foods. The Martin County Food Pantry serves more than 100 families a month. In addition to the expanded freezer and cooler space, the new facility includes a loading dock to accept deliveries from partners like the WTFB. Director of Martin County Food Pantry, Kim Juarez, said in the release, the pantry is excited to offer more fresh foods to the people in the community. The new building was made possible by community funding and a large grant from the Midland-based FMH Foundation, the Scarber Foundation, the Joanne and Wayne Moore Foundation. The building is named in memory of Bob Davenport, who was instrumental in establishing a permanent food bank in Martin County after he retired from the office of county judge in 1998. Funding was made possible from the Stanton Community Fund and the Permian Basin Area Foundation. The expansion of the Martin County Food Pantry into the new facility is a game changer for those struggling with hunger in Martin County, said WTFB Executive Director Libby Campbell in the release. Community Fridge opens. Midland Health, Healthy City, and Christmas in Action have partnered to provide a community fridge that is expected to serve the needs of the local community with fresh fruits and vegetables to support those who may be experiencing food insecurity. The fridge provides an accessible way for underserved Midland County residents to obtain whole foods and information on healthy lifestyle choices. The launch of the community fridge took place Thursday at 500 South Lee Street. Compiled from staff reports. Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, August 6, 2021. Things to Know About Midland's Average Gas Price by Stuart Doreen. AAA Texas released its weekly gas report, providing information on the 27 largest metropolitan statistical areas. Midland and Odessa are on that list and are home to two of the highest three averages in the state. Here is more information. The average price for regular unleaded in Midland increased by 1 penny compared to last week. The average is $3.02, which is the same as Odessa, where the price stayed level week over week. Midland and Odessa are tied for the second highest average in the state, behind El Paso at $3.24. Drivers in Amarillo paid the lowest average, $2.76. The average in the state is $2.84, which is a 1 cent increase compared to last week. The national average is $3.19. Other MSAs with averages at or above $2.90 a gallon are Texarkana, $2.93, and Tyler, $2.91. Around West Texas, AAA Texas reported the following averages: $2.79 in Lubbock, $2.82 in San Angelo, and $2.88 in Abilene. In mid-July of 2020, the average price in Midland was $1.99, which was $1.03 less than the current average. The average across the state 1 year ago was $1.86, which was 98 cents less. Since January 1st, the average in Midland is 95 cents higher, while the state average is up 90 cents, according to AAA Texas. The record average for gas in Midland is $4.04 from July 16, 2008.
Road Bond is doing what was needed. Kudos go out to the city for its work on the road bond. No one said it was going to be easy, but it is work that needed to be done. The road bond highlights an issue that we often see in our community. People complain about the roads, and candidates run for office telling people how bad the roads are. Still, no one likes the solution. Yes, the streets will be torn up and utilities must be taken care of. That is part of the process, and the process matters. I credit the council and city leaders, including J. Ross Lacey, for coming up with a solid road bond plan. Our community also deserves credit for recognizing the plan was a good one and making the decision to make our city better. It was the right thing to do. We have to remember that there is not a city leader that wants to tackle roads and infrastructure. They don't want to deal with the massive amount of money required to pave streets, deal with flooding, fix utilities, and make sure water and sewer is brought into the 21st century. They like parks and shiny things that get your attention. Here's the deal. Even if this community stops growing tomorrow, we have plenty of needs left when it comes to infrastructure in the city. We have plenty of roads that are in poor shape. We have plenty of water and sewer underneath Old Midland that will need to be replaced. Midland is mainly an older community that still requires tax dollars to keep it functioning like we expect and deserve. So when people running for city council talk about tax rates, budgets, and parks, make sure they also address the infrastructure element. How much do they want to dedicate to make sure Midland runs properly? Make sure they talk about those things that, honestly, they don't want to address. Make them specific. At the end of the day, our community has two choices. The first is to have lackluster infrastructure because we don't want to pay for it and no one likes to be inconvenienced by the construction around the city. We saw how that worked for decades, and Midland is not better because of it. The second is to make sure we take care of needed capital projects and have a healthy portion of the city budget dedicated to roads and those other things below ground. The choice is ours. And when it goes bad, we have only ourselves to blame. Danny Ireton, 61, passed away on Wednesday, August the 4th in Stanton. The family suggests memorials be made to the Stanton Volunteer Fire Department, the First Baptist Church of Stanton, or the Martin County Food Bank. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home. Joaquin Beltran Urivas passed away on August 4th. Funeral mass will be at 1 p.m. on August 6th at San Miguel Archangel Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Joshua Rene Saucedo, 15 years old, went to be with our Lord on July 31st. The family will receive friends for viewing and visitation Friday, August 6th from 9 to 8:30 p.m. with a rosary beginning at 7 at El Gran Marquez. A funeral mass will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 7th at Our Lady of Guadalupe. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home in Midland. Johnny Lee Nelson, 72, of Odessa, passed away on August 5th at his home in Odessa. Visitation will be held Sunday, August 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Graveside services will be on Monday, August 9th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Roger John Davis, 63, of Gardendale, passed away on August 2nd. Celebration of life will be on Saturday, August 7th at 6 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Roelda Solis Dreyunen of Odessa passed away on August 3rd. Visitation will be held on Friday, August 6th from 11 to 1 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Funeral service will be on Friday, August 6th at 1 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, August 6th, 2021. OC reaches Health Sciences Building Goal. Thanks to a $2 million donation from the Wood Family Foundation, Odessa College will have the funds it needs to construct the $40 million Wood Health Sciences Building. Thursday's announcement, made in the foyer of the Salisbury Campus Center, brings the total contribution of the Wood family to $7 million. The groundbreaking for the four-story state-of-the-art building is scheduled for 10 a.m. September 1st and is also the kickoff of OC's 75th anniversary. Don Wood speaks at a press conference to announce the financial pledge of $2 million made by the Wood Family Foundation to complete the $40 million Phase 1 capital campaign for the new Wood Health Sciences Building Thursday afternoon in the Salisbury Center. The announcement also comes against the backdrop of increasing COVID-19 cases locally and nationally, and at a time when the need for healthcare professionals is stronger than ever. Vice President of Advancement Jackie Gore asked for a moment of silence to remember those who have died from the disease during the past 18 months. Gore also asked that attendees remember healthcare workers, quote, who are fighting the fight each and every day, end quote. Gore also asked those from the School of Health Sciences to stand and be recognized. Quote, these individuals are working very hard with our students each and every day, getting them ready to go right to work here in the Permian Basin, end quote, Gore said. The gathering was also to celebrate the long-standing partnership and friendship between Odessa College and the Wood family. Quote, Odessa College's friendship with the Wood family started with Clay Wood in the late 1970s and early 1980s and has continued with his sons Don and Jack Wood, as well as Brenda Denton, who serves as the executive director of the Wood Family Foundation, end quote, Gore said. Don and his wife Tanya and Denton were among those on hand Thursday. In addition to establishing and continuing scholarships, the Wood Family Foundation has also helped increase capacity at Odessa College, Gore said. In 2012, the Wood family committed $3 million to name the Wood Math and Science Building, which was under construction at that time, Gore said. Quote, in December of 2020, they helped Odessa College to launch a $40 million Health Sciences Building capital campaign, and they committed $5 million to name the building the Wood Health Sciences Building. The Wood family's support of this project came at a time when our community was experiencing record numbers of COVID cases. Oil prices were low and unemployment was high. This support of this important project not only gave Odessa College hope, but it also gave our community hope, end quote, Gore said. Gore noted that it, quote, immediately opened doors, end quote, with other partners who said they wanted to be part of the project alongside the Wood family. Only 8 months after the Wood family helped OC start the campaign, OC was at 95% of the $40 million goal with about $2 million left to raise to cover the bricks and mortar of the building. Thursday's donation put them over the top. Quote, "We know that we could not have done this without the Woods, that's for sure," end quote, Gore added. Don Wood said the family believes it is crucial to support education. Quote, "We support Odessa and we believe in Odessa College. President Dr. Gregory Williams and the entire Odessa College team are doing important work, and we believe it is imperative that we support that. Supporting education is important for many reasons. Education concerns the lives of students and the lives of students' families. They can derive a career path and support our workforce and an education to make your dreams come true," end quote, Wood said. He added that he appreciated other contributors who have stepped up, quote, "significantly," end quote, to make the health sciences building a reality. Odessa College President Gregory Williams said the college is so appreciative of what the Wood family has done and said the college would not be there without them. Up until Thursday, Williams said the $7 million gift from Mackenzie Scott and Dan Jewett was the largest in the history of OC. Quote, "But I can't say that anymore. The Wood Family Foundation, with their $7 million gift," end quote, "now matches the largest gift the college has ever received," Williams said. Quote, "I can't say thank you enough. You all have been amazing to me, to the college, to the community. The people around this town and the area respect you more than you know. We would not have been able to raise this money without you, your name, your support, your vision during a pandemic, saying this is something that's needed. We'll put our name on it and we'll put our money behind it. So thank you. We appreciate you," end quote, Williams said. Gore said the campaign will continue with phase two, which will go toward equipment, technology, and other costs related to the building. Quote, "Those same opportunities are still available," end quote, she said. Quote, "We will be launching that campaign in the community here in the coming weeks," end quote. Following the announcement, Don Wood said they wanted OC to have a full budget. Quote, "We didn't want them to cut any corners. We wanted a top-notch health sciences building," end quote, he said. Tanya Wood said OC can now build the structure to meet their expectations, quote, "the way they had planned originally," end quote. Asked what Gore's secret was that she was able to successfully fundraise during a pandemic, Denton said that it's Gore is so personable. Quote, "She connects with everybody in the community on their level, and she's just sincere. She loves Odessa College, and it shows, so it makes you want to work with her in the college," end quote, Denton said. Don Wood said the important thing is that students are being educated. Quote, "Odessa College is doing a great job of recruiting students and educating them, and they continue to show up," end quote, among some of the top 10 colleges in the nation. Quote, "And we're proud of them, so we want to support them. They make it easy," end quote, Wood said. Warm welcome. ECISD, YMCA, cuts ribbon at Pagewood Learning Center. Prior to Thursday's ribbon-cutting ceremony at the Pagewood Learning Center, Heather Ortiz said she was scrambling to find a pre-K-3 program for her son. Ortiz said she had initially planned on taking her son Levi to Burnett Elementary, but she found out the school was no longer offering a pre-K program. After she called around to other pre-K programs in Odessa, Ortiz was directed to the Pagewood Learning Center, which was scheduled to begin classes this year. Quote, "I was a little scared that we weren't going to figure anything out, but thank God everything worked out," end quote, said Ortiz, a mother of five. Quote, "He's really excited. He's talking about his class and his teacher and his friends. To know that he's going to have that opportunity to get started early with education and have the foundation and stepping stones to move on to elementary, it means a lot," end quote. Levi Ortiz helped members of the Ector County Independent School District and YMCA cut the ribbon on Thursday morning to officially open the Pagewood Learning Center. Heather Ortiz said it is special that ECISD and the YMCA would welcome her son with open arms. "For them to, quote, for them to reach out and invite us here, that definitely meant a lot to him," end quote, she said with a smile. Quote, "When he found out he was going to help cut the ribbon, he stood right up and he was ready," end quote. The Pagewood Learning Center becomes the third pre-K program that works in connection with ECISD. The other two are the Lamar Early Education Center and Carver Early Education Center. However, the Pagewood Learning Center is unique from the other early education centers as it will offer childcare before and after school. Chrissy Medina, the CEO of the Odessa Family YMCA, said children who need child care after school will be transported to another YMCA location while the licensed child care at the Pagewood facility is finalized. Medina expects to have the license by September 1st. Quote, I feel that it will be a really beneficial service for parents who are worried about their child and who are going to watch their child after a half day of pre-K, end quote, Medina said. ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray said the need for extended pre-K came when numbers showed 2 years ago that 1,300 children weren't ready for kindergarten. The pre-K 3 program will be a half day that will be a Frog Street 3 curriculum, which is specifically designed for pre-K to 3-year-old children. Murray said the pre-K 4 program extends to a full day of learning to prepare children for kindergarten. Quote, a lot of those preschool skills that kids need are letter recognition skills, color recognition skills, learning how to work in groups. A lot of socialization happens, especially with the age of 3, end quote, he said. Quote, a lot of socialization activities will happen as part of the pre-K program, end quote. Medina said the partnership between the YMCA and ECISD was a perfect fit. The Pagewood Learning Center will have 14 classrooms with a facility that spans 21,000 square feet on a piece of property that extends 7.3 acres. Medina said this facility will be the building blocks of learning for many children. Quote, we are already doing similar curriculums within our organization, end quote, she said. Quote, the transition was almost just meant to be, end quote. Mason Pride to celebrate LGBTQ plus community. The annual Odessa Midland Basin Pride event, which will be held over 3 days this year, will kick off today with a local artist exhibit and an ambitious drag show performance based on the popular 1865 English children's tale Alice in Wonderland. A variety of family-friendly activities, including games and arts and crafts for youths, a lip-sync singing contest, live music performances, and an interfaith worship service are scheduled for Saturday and Sunday, said Brian Wilson, executive director of Odessa-based Pride Center of West Texas. Basin Pride was organized by the Basin Pride Committee, which is a subgroup of the Pride Center. Quote, we wanted to offer more family-friendly activities, end quote, said Wilson, explaining why organizers decided to expand Basin Pride from 1 to 3 days. Quote, we have something for all ages this year, end quote. The art exhibit, which will feature canvas, digital, and photography artwork, will be held from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. today at downtown Odessa's Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. Artwork will be available to purchase, and participating artists have pledged to donate a portion of sales to the Pride Center, Wilson said. The exhibit is free and open to the public. A drag performance of, quote, Alice in Prideland, end quote, plus music and dancing will follow from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. at the Midland Beer Garden. Tickets for the event can be purchased on the internet at www.basinpride.com in advance or at the door, Wilson said. Only those 21 years or older will be admitted to this adult-oriented event. The first Basin Pride held in 2019 was a one-day event that attracted about 1,000 people, organizers said. The festival was canceled in 2020 due to COVID-19 restrictions. Increased interest for this year's event prompted organizers to establish an agreement officially making the Marriott the event's, quote, official, end quote, host hotel. Wilson and other organizers say Basin Pride is an opportunity for the LGBTQN plus community to interact and celebrate who they are along with their friends, family, and community supporters. Quote, we want Basin Pride to be seen as a safe place for LGBTQN people to exist and feel like they are part of the community, end quote, Wilson said. A wide variety of family-friendly activities will be featured when Basin Pride resumes from 1 p.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday at Odessa's Noel Heritage Plaza, Wilson said. There is no admission fee and the event is open to the public. Ongoing games and arts and craft-making opportunities for youths of all ages will be offered on Saturday, along with live music performances, music by local icon DJ Trixie, with the beloved Sister Amor, saint of perpetual indulgence, serving as the mistress of ceremonies. More than 35 food and merchandise vendors will also be participating. Alcohol will not be sold or allowed on the premises. Odessa Arts will host a, quote, recovery, end quote, brunch from 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 6:30 p.m. at Beryl and Derek Restaurant located inside the Marriott. A 2:30 p.m. interfaith worship service will be held at St. John's Episcopal Church with Reverends Ricardo Lopez and Pauline Williamson presiding. Quick Hits. Gun and Blade Show. Silver Spur Trade Shows has scheduled Gun and Blade Show from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Midland County Horseshoe, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Admission is $7 for adults and free for 12 and under. Two-day pass is $12, $1 off for NRA/TSRA or active military with ID. Tickets sold at the door, cash only. Visit SilverSpurTradeShows.com. From Staff Reports.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read from the Odessa American, published Friday, August 6th. Local News Roundup. Fun Run. The American Legion Riders Group, Post 430, has scheduled a fun run Saturday at the American Legion Post 430, 2701 East 8th Street. Registration starts at 10 a.m. at the patio behind the building. Kickstands up at 11 a.m., last bike at 5 p.m. Payout for first, second, and third hand will be presented. Stops include first stop, Legacy Harley-Davidson, 12100 West Highway 80. Second stop, Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern, 3113 West Industrial Avenue, Midland. Third stop, Barbara Restaurant at Sunset Golf Course, 9301 Andrews Highway. Fourth stop, The Rabbit Hole Bar, 6009 North Golder Avenue. And fifth stop, Shelley's Place, 3000 North FM, 1936. Cost is $10 a tally card. Visit tinyurl.com/2ECTCAKF. Build a Backpack. The law firm Fadul, Clough, Hardy, and Conaway has scheduled the second annual FCHC Build a Backpack at 10 a.m. August 7th in the FCHC parking lot, 1931 East 37th Street, Suite 1 and 2. Music will be provided by B93. Curbside Bistro will be grilling hot dogs. Kona Ice will be handing out snow cones. Paw Patrol will be hanging out with the kiddos, and OPD Crime Unit will be doing fingerprints. FCHC will be giving away 500 backpacks. Each child will be able to build their own backpack with school supplies. The event is on a first-come, first-served basis. For more information, call 335-0399. Will Seminar. The Omicron Epsilon Lambda Chapter of Alpha Phi Delta Fraternity Incorporated has scheduled a Will Seminar from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday at Golf Course Road Church of Christ, 3500 West Golf Course Road in Midland. For more information, call the Gavin Norris Law Office at 432-279-0858. West Texas Bull Invasion. West Texas Bull Invasion No Limits Tour has been scheduled for Saturday at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Doors open at 6 p.m. For tickets, visit bit.ly/bullrides. Free Concert. First Baptist Church, 2104 West Louisiana Avenue, Midland, has scheduled a free concert featuring Jeremy Camp at 6 p.m. Saturday. Doors will open at 5:30 p.m. For more information, call 432-683-0600. Back to school service. Odessa Christian Faith Center, 8860 Andrews Highway, has scheduled its annual back-to-school service at 9 a.m., 10:45 a.m., and 12:30 p.m. during Sunday services. Spanish interpretation and child care are available. For more information, call 432 3-6-8-7-7-1-4.
Obituaries. Jerry Venable. Ben Alstein. Retired Reverend Jerry Venable, 78, passed away at his home, surrounded by family, on July 31, 2021, after a valiant battle with a long illness. He is preceded in death by his parents, Robert and Bonnie Venable, and sister Roberta Bobby Harrison. He is survived by his wife of 59 years, Melba Venable, sister Wilma Engel of Clute, Texas, son Mark Venable of Frisco, Texas, daughter Heidi Mike Munoz of Heath, Texas, grandchildren Matthew and Anthony Munoz. He is also survived by brothers and sisters-in-law Fred Bradley of Van Alstine, Texas, Scott and Kelly Bradley of Westlake, Texas, Ronnie and Donna Bradley of Granbury, Texas, Dallas and Debbie Bradley of Midland, Texas, and several nieces and nephews. The family would like to give special thanks to Guardian Hospice caregivers for their caring and compassionate ministry for the past 7 months. A graveside memorial service will be held on Saturday, August 7, 2021 at 9:30 a.m. at the IOOF Westlake Cemetery, located at 3101 J.T. Ottinger Road, Westlake, Texas, 76262, with Reverend James Jackson presiding over the service, assisted by Reverend Len McLaughlin. Flor Maria Castillo de Villa, Wichita, Kansas. Flor Maria Castillo de Villa, 48, of Odessa, passed away July 29, 2021, in Wichita, Kansas. Flor was born in Oenaga, Mexico, on June 14, 1973, to Maria Guadalupe Olivas Orona and Domingo Castillo Jimenez. She was the eldest child and had two sisters and four brothers. Flor is preceded in death by her father, Domingo Castillo Jimenez, and brothers Mariano Castillo and Martin Castillo. She is survived by her husband, Ramon Alvarado Villa, daughters Haritzel Villa and Stephanie Villa, sons Dominic Villa and Ramon Villa Jr., grandchildren Zavin Porras, Jaden Villa, Delena Villa, Kaysen Porras, Domley Villa, Adelaide Marino, and one on the way. Mother Maria Guadalupe Olivas Arona, brothers Victor Manuel Castillo and Jorge Castillo, sisters Luz Alina Castillo and Maria Guadalupe Cruz, as well as numerous nieces, nephews, extended family, and friends. A visitation will be held on Friday, August 6th from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Saturday, August 7th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Sunset Funeral Home in Odessa. Funeral services will take place Saturday, August 7th, 2021 at 2 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Josh Zuniga from Kingdom Church is officiating. Arrangements entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign our guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Corrine P. Berry, Odessa. Corrine P. Berry, 84, of Odessa, Texas, died Thursday, July 29, 2021, in Odessa, Texas. Graveside service will be held at 9 a.m. August 6th, 2021, at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Roger John Davis, Odessa. Roger John Davis, 63, of Odessa, died Monday, August 2, 2021, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 6 o'clock p.m., August 7, 2021, at American Heritage Funeral Home. Chris Hager is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Roelda Solis de Reunion, Odessa. Roelda Solis de Reunion, 56, of Odessa, died Tuesday, August 3, 2021, in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 1 o'clock p.m., August 6, 2021, at American Heritage Funeral Home. Steve Westfall and Ken Villaluiz is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Ellis M. Morgan Hardin Jr. Big Spring. Ellis M. Morgan Hardin Jr., 97, of Odessa, Texas, died Tuesday, August 3rd, 2021, in Big Spring, Texas. Chapel service will be held at 1 p.m. August 14th, 2021. Frank W. Wilson. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Garden. David Evans is officiating. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson Funeral Home, 7509 of Odessa. Bruce Wayne Mitchell, Odessa. Bruce Wayne Mitchell, 64, died Tuesday, August 3rd, 2021 in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Johnny Lee Nelson, Odessa. Johnny Lee Nelson, 72, died Thursday, August 5th, 2021 in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Funeral Home of Midland.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, August 4th, 2021. Making an Impact. The caption reads, Superintendent of Rankin ISD, Samuel Wyatt, left, and his assistant superintendent, Michelle Reinhardt, posed for a photo recently at the Region 18 Education Service Center. Back in West Texas, after a sojourn to Massachusetts to earn a Doctor of Education Leadership at Harvard, Michelle Reinhardt is back in Rankin as Associate Superintendent. Previously an education consultant for Region 18 Education Service Center, stationed at the Fort Davis office, Reinhardt was looking for a Rhodes Scholar Program, or a Next Step Leadership Program within education, so she conducted some different searches to see what might be possible. Harvard's program appealed to her because it was specifically looking at creating transformative system-level leaders for kindergarten through 12th grade schools in the United States, Reinhardt said in a May 2019 interview. Born and raised outside of London, Ontario, Canada, Reinhardt earned a bachelor's degree in mathematics and physics and put in an extra year at Teachers College in Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Reinhardt earned a master's in curriculum and instruction from Texas A&M University. The Harvard program is 3 years. She did a superintendent practicum with Superintendent John Phelan at Belmont Public Schools in Massachusetts the first year. I did a year-long internship with him learning how to be a superintendent, and I did it all virtually, which was a really interesting experience that truth only could have happened, I think, during the pandemic crisis, when everyone was really reimagining what virtual work could look like, and to lead across the miles, so that worked out great, Reinhardt said in a recent interview at Region 18. Although it was virtual, Reinhardt said, it was an incredible experience. The curriculum focused on many areas, but the one that was the most transformative was asking what it takes for leaders to work on things that keep them from moving up to the next level of influence. This work will help change schools and student outcomes. If we do that work, then it will really empower us to lead change in a way that we couldn't do otherwise, she added. Reinhardt started as Associate Superintendent in Rankin July 5th. Sammy Wyatt is the superintendent. The Associate superintendency is part of the third year of her program. In that residency, you partner with a school district or a state education agency like TEA or a state or national nonprofit like Raise Your Hand Texas, and you're hired to be in a system-level role and to lead a strategic change project within the district. I've just started my 10-month residency in Rankin as assistant superintendent, and I'll be leading a project there this year and then graduating in May, Reinhart said. She was first placed with Jill Seiler at Gunter ISD, a small rural district north of Dallas. But Seiler was recruited to work at the Texas Association of School Administrators, so Reinhart had to find another spot. In mid-May, Reinhart was visiting with Seiler and many others across the state to ask them who they would recommend, and Wyatt was the answer. DeWitt Smith, executive director of Region 18, said Reinhart and Wyatt are cut from the same cloth as they are both innovators and they represent what is possible for people in West Texas. Reinhart taught math and science in Rankin from 2013 to 2020. Considered property wealthy, Rankin gives $45 to $50 million back to the state in recapture every year. Rankin has 300 students in pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. The district has 77 staff members. It plays six-man football and is one of the smaller districts in Texas. They may be small, but Reinhart said Rankin is embarking on some innovative and progressive things. Sammy does an incredible job of leading locally and thinking about what's in the best interest of Rankin kids. He's very well networked and informed and influential both on the state level and at the federal level. What appeals to me about that is right now I'm an aspiring superintendent. That's what I see as my next role as a district in West Texas. But longer term, I'm really interested in what does it look like to help a group of rural districts run by different superintendents to improve teaching and learning at scale. Because right now, everyone does their own thing the best they can. But what would it look like as a region if we tackled the fact that some of our outcomes for kids are the lowest in the state? And how do we improve that at scale across rural districts in Texas? Reinhart said she's really been impressed by the leadership Wyatt has been involved in at the state and federal level while leading in a rural district instead of seeing it as a stepping stone. She added that there are a number of opportunities coming from the state tied to COVID funding or accelerated learning. She wonders what it would look like to have district-level leadership that partners with the principals at each campus to leverage those resources and programs as effectively as possible. We're really thinking about an instructional or curriculum instructional focus and or an internal leadership development focus, or maybe also some work around teaming and collaboration, Reinhart said. A lot of times in our smaller districts, people are very, very effective at their individual role. But what would it look like to actually build in collaboration so that teachers can learn from each other and leverage their strengths, but also administrators in the district can learn to team and take things to the next level. So those are some of the things we're thinking about that will fall under my purview, she said. However, her first few weeks on the job have involved helping the district stay up on new legislation that came out of the legislative session and new opportunities that came out at the beginning of July, and thinking about how they can apply for those, she said. Reinhart noted that Wyatt has strong ties with neighboring districts such as Crane, McCamey, Iran, and Glasscock County, so they can work together and share best practices. Reinhart and Wyatt were at Region 18 for the Aspiring Superintendent Certification Program. They presented on politics and education. But one of the things we talked about was how do you deliberately foster connections across superintendents in rural school districts, Reinhart said. The superintendency can be a lonely job if you let it be. It's much more powerful to build these networks where people you're meeting with people regularly. You're sharing ideas. You're sharing challenges instead of trying to keep those hidden so that you can really leverage the expertise that exists across the region. She said they also heard from Educational Partnership of the Permian Basin Executive Director Adrian Vega and Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray. Reinhart said they are excited to be part of the partnership's work going forward. She said Rankin is all about excellence, both in the classroom and in extracurriculars. Reinhart said Rankin is seeing strong outcomes on the STAR test and students graduating with associate degrees and careers and technical education certifications in welding, for example. We're adding a new nursing program this year to help students become certified to be a certified medical assistant. We already had a CNA program, so Rankin is thinking very creatively about industry, certifications, associate degrees, bachelor's degrees, college, career, and military readiness in a way that many 1A districts aren't able to do, Reinhart said. State STAR scores this year showed a 16% drop in math. We had a 0% drop, and so we consider that a huge win in the midst of an incredibly challenging year for students and teachers, Reinhart said. We are excited for the areas that we have to improve on and the people that we have on board to do the work to keep growing, Reinhart added. Wyatt said the district was fourth in the Lone Star Cup at the 1A level. The Lone Star Cup, he said, is a compilation of kind of extracurricular sports and academics. It includes things like one-act play, debate, along with sports like track and football. Wyatt said the district came in fourth in the UIL academic meet. We were second in the UIL state track meet. We won state in one-act play, and we won state in calculator applications, he added. He said the broadcast team, called the Red Devil Network, was recognized nationally with the 2020-21 Event of the Year, awarded by Mascot Media. We also have a state qualifying barbecue team, Wyatt said. We had three teams that qualified at the state level for barbecue. They were also featured in Texas Monthly Magazine, Wyatt said. Reinhardt said those are just a few of the things Rankin ISD has excelled at, and all during a pandemic year. She added that it was a really interesting place to come and learn about the superintendency. Wyatt has been in Rankin for 11 years, including 8 as high school principal. "I'm starting my 4th year as superintendent," Wyatt said. He became a district chief to impact not only students, but educators. It's been a domino theory. You impact an educator, you impact a whole flood of kids. I look at it as a top-down approach, and if I can impact the educators underneath me, they're going to impact so many kids in different ways. That's my job as a superintendent, is to make sure that the educators and the people on our staff have kids at the forefront of every decision they make, Wyatt said. He grew up in Rochester, a small 6-man school north of Abilene. Wyatt got his bachelor's and master's degrees and his superintendent's certification from Angelo State University. His view of being a superintendent came from looking around Texas to see what schools were the best, contacting the superintendents, being part of the superintendents' organizations, and talking to them to see what they were doing. We focus a lot on the output. We may have some really clever programs, but if they're not doing what we need them to do, then they're just a waste of time. So the main thing I did was shop around, visit with other superintendents across the state, and I joined many organizations, he said. There's a whole multitude of organizations that are very helpful for superintendents. It takes a lot of our time, but we have to go to conferences and learn from the best and take notes and take those things seriously, but then figure out how you can apply them in a rural West Texas school like Rankin ISD, he said. Reinhardt said Rankin is one of the smallest districts that a Harvard resident has ever chosen to work with. Some of my cohort mates, there's 25 of us in the program in my year, and so my cohort mates are working with the New York City Department of Education, Chicago Public Schools, LA Unified, the biggest 3 districts in the entire United States. It was a deliberate decision for me to come to a district like Rankin because every community, regardless of size, deserves great leadership and great outcomes for kids. What you can do and how you do it in those big districts is vastly different than what you can do in these small communities. What I believe about the value of rural schools is that in a large district, they might talk about, we serve these many tens of thousands of kids. But in a small district, you have the ability to fundamentally improve a community or underserved community and transform 100% of the lives of the people that live there, Reinhardt said. Wyatt is the director of the Texas Math and Science Coaches Association. That's kind of a love of mine, and we host one of the largest academic meets in the United States. They have a junior high meet or middle school meet and a high school meet every year in San Antonio at UTSA. I'm a part of the board that does all the planning and organization for that meet. Some of the work we're doing there is extremely valuable across the state of Texas, Wyatt said. During the last legislative session, he also was involved in lobbying for or against certain bills that would either benefit Rankin or hurt it. He added that he wrote some bill killer legislation to help legislators fight on their behalf. We also phone called with Tom Craddock and Senator Charles Perry and lobby for things that were maybe not good for Rankin, but then some things that were good for Rankin, Wyatt said. He added that he was on a committee at the federal level to help share information with other superintendents nationwide that would help the Secretary of Education prepare for his hearing. Back in Texas, Wyatt is the incoming chair for the Region 18 TASA group. He's vice chair currently. We have a multitude of meetings throughout the following spring. We bring in some really high-powered speakers. Kim Alexander is on the board now, and LaTanya Goffney. I'm in charge of helping the Service Center bring in some powerful speakers to speak to the Region 18 superintendents, Wyatt said. Wyatt also has served as the representative for Region 18 in the Commissioner's Cabinet. There's one representative from every region in the state of Texas. We go there and we give the commissioner information. He shares information with us. He asks us how it impacts our region. Then we come back to our region superintendents, and I share the information that I learned from those meetings, he said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.